versus Roberta Fuse.
May it please the court and counsel, Assistant Attorney General Lisa Smith appearing on behalf of the respondent appellant. The issue before the court today concerns the rule enunciated in Stone v. Powell, which provides where the state has provided an opportunity for full and fair litigation of Fourth Amendment claims, there can be no habeas relief on the ground that evidence obtained in an unconstitutional search or seizure is used at trial. Specifically, the respondent is respectfully requesting that this court reconsider the meaning of opportunity for full and fair litigation. The test used by this court is set forth in Pearson v. O'Leary, Weber v. Murphy, and confirmed in Turrentine v. Miller requires, one, that the petitioner inform the state court of the factual basis for his claim, and that the state court carefully and thoroughly analyze the facts and apply the proper constitutional law. The difficulty that the respondent sees with that test is that instead of that test being a threshold test to determine if Stone versus Powell will be pierced, the district court actually must consider and conduct a merit analysis of the claim, which defeats the rule excluding those types of claims. Accordingly, once the district court would determine the merits of the claim, instead of proceeding along with further analysis under the AEDPA, they've already determined the substantive issue and then will either grant relief or deny relief. Also, under that test, the appropriate deference to state court decisions is not being given. With Weber, the Weber test provides that they have to thoroughly analyze the facts and apply proper constitutional law. Under the AEDPA, the standard is somewhat different, where we're talking about unreasonable applications of clearly established federal law. I believe under the AEDPA there's more deference being given to the state court's determination as opposed to the Weber test. Other circuits have focused and emphasized on the opportunity for the full and fair litigation and not the actual outcome of that litigation. Specifically,
how can you tell whether there's been an opportunity for full and fair litigation without paying at least some attention to how the court disposes of arguments that have been made to it? That is, suppose the defendant seeking to have evidence suppressed relies heavily on two cases by the Supreme Court, and the state court then denies the motion, not mentioning those cases. Would it be appropriate to infer that it had just sat there through the argument with its ears shut? And, right, that would be a denial of full and fair opportunity to litigate.
Well, I think
I don't see how these two can be neatly separated.
I think they have to be in order to give full deference to the AEDPA. And I think in that situation, if a petitioner feels that he was denied that by the state court, not paying attention to Supreme Court law, then he could also petition for writ of certiorari, which is what has been suggested by some.
On that view, however, even a denial of full and fair opportunity to litigate is not a basis for federal relief. And that's not the line Stone drew. Right? The concern that's bothering me, doubtless bothered earlier panels here, is what happens if the state says, introduce all the evidence you want, but your judge is simply a brick. There is no argument you can make that will penetrate more than 1 millimeter beneath the surface. And this brick will then, at the end, reject whatever contentions you've made. After allowing you to build a full factual record, there's no way you can make a real argument to a brick.
And I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. I would think, though, at that point, you would still have the right to petition higher courts to review
I understand that. But on that view, Stone v. Powell should have said, claims under the Fourth Amendment never provide the basis for relief in federal court. If we get past the direct appeal, over and out. That's not what it said. Just not what it said. So the question is, how can one determine whether the state has offered a real opportunity to litigate or only the surface appearance of an opportunity to litigate?
Well, I think as far as the surface appearance, some of the other cases do talk about, you know, if the state does something to deny the process altogether.
No. Bricks don't rule from the bench. Right? You've got this judge. He's going to allow the defendant to build a full record because he's just a lump of coal sitting in the middle of the bench. The defendant's going to build every kind of record he wants, but nothing's going to happen.
Again, I'm not certain how we can get around that either. But I do see, I guess my problem is I'm going one step further, and under the Weber test as enunciated now, we're not giving proper deference that the AEDPA requires to the state court's decision. And I understand what you're saying. In certain cases, the state decision could be wrong, but other circuits have determined that we're not looking at whether or not the outcome.
What my question implies is some kind of input-output analysis, that you look at the difference between what was said to the tribunal and what the tribunal did with it.
And
have you performed such an input-output analysis in this case, by the way?
No, I don't believe I have directed or answered your question.
You know, a simple question in this case. The district court said this was not a full and fair opportunity to litigate because the state appellate court did not discuss Brown against Texas. Right?
Correct.
So that leads logically to the question, was Brown against Texas cited to the state appellate court?
And I don't recall if it had been or not.
We have
the
brief and the record in this case. The answer is no, it was not.
And I do, and I will say to this court that certainly the facts in this case are probably not the best to make this argument. But and that's why I've been focusing on really the difference between opportunity for hearing as really doing a merits discussion versus opportunity that you've at least had your ability to present your arguments to the court, and whether the court, the state court, is right or wrong. You've had that opportunity, which is what some of the other circuits have focused on. For example, the Eighth Circuit in Hines versus Auger stated that the emphasis, again, was on the opportunity, not the actual litigation. And the court felt that the Hines court felt that was consistent with the court's concerns for finality and comity.
I'm not sure why
you realize you're into your rebuttal.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure why you think there is a difference between our approach and those of the other circuits. Turntine against Miller says that what the court is looking for is egregious error in ignoring cases on point cited to the tribunal. Now, that looks like the kind of input-output analysis that I've been hinting at and which I think other courts are interested in.
I'm not sure that I guess I don't see it as the same. The circuits that vary, I don't see that as the same test. If at this time I would like to reserve the rest of my rebuttal time.
All right. Bye.
Good morning, Your Honors. On this point that Judge Easterbrook brings up about whether Brown versus Texas was cited to the appellate court, you'll notice in looking at the briefs that the defendant's brief in the appellate court argued very strenuously that this was a detention in violation of Terry because there was no reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. And
But you agree that Brown against Texas was never cited to the state court?
Well, yes, because my point is
that doesn't that make it very hard to grant a writ of habeas corpus on the grounds that somebody has been deprived of his constitutional rights because the state court did not analyze a case it was never asked to analyze?
Well, no, it's not. It doesn't depend on whether the appellate court analyzed Brown versus Texas.
That's what the district court thought. District court took the failure to discuss Brown against Texas as the demonstration that the Illinois appellate court had not given this case serious consideration.
Well, what the district court was saying broadly was that this is a completely unique exception to the warrant requirement of the Fourth Amendment. I mean, the relevant Supreme Court...
Let me ask a more general question. Are there any cases that were cited to the Supreme Court of Illinois and not dealt with by that court?
Well, the Supreme Court of Illinois, of course, just...
The Illinois Appellate Court.
No, but, Your Honor, this theory was not discussed in the briefs. The state didn't raise this theory, and the defendant didn't raise the theory. The theory came full-blown out of the appellate court opinion and was discussed in the petition to the Illinois Supreme Court by the defendant. But obviously neither the state or the defendant was aware or could have suspected that the appellate court was going to come up with this entirely new theory of a new exception to the Fourth Amendment warrant requirement, namely that the police can stop someone they think is a witness. Even a witness whose identity they know and they know they can contact anytime they want to talk to them, they can do a detention. And the unusual posture that this comes to in the federal court is that the appellate court looked at the record and made a finding that there was a detention here and said, but he wasn't suspected of criminal activity, but here's this treatise that says, well, maybe you can have a so-called Terry stop of a person that you think is just a witness that you want to talk to. And I think Judge Gettleman has done a very good job of demonstrating that that is completely off the wall. There's no support, certainly no support in the Supreme Court.
Let me put it this way. If you had to choose what you think is your best reason for saying that the claim did not receive full and fair consideration in the state courts, what would that be?
That the appellate court, seizing on a theory that wasn't even discussed in the briefs, decided to invent a new exception.
That proves too much. We do not view ourselves as slaves to the briefs. We may decide even this case on a theory that was not articulated in so many words in the briefs. Does it follow that we have not provided full and fair consideration to the parties' positions?
No, it doesn't, but I assume...
All right, well, then I repeat my question. What reason have we to think, what's your best argument, that this appellate court did not give full and fair consideration to the Fourth Amendment argument?
Because this is a federal court that's guarding the Constitution, where the Supreme Court has said that searches do not occur unless there's a well-defined exception to the warrant requirement.
Arguing the merits, and the merits are the one thing that Stone against Powell puts off consideration. And the basic holding of Stone is that the exclusionary rule is not a personal right that can be vindicated on collateral attack.
Well,
a personal right is the right to full and fair consideration by the state courts. And I'm trying to figure out why, other than your disagreement with the merits, your view is that the state court, State Appellate Court of Illinois, was basically three pieces of stonemasonry.
They weren't three pieces of stonemasonry, but they were wrong, Your Honor, on the constitutional law. Mm-hmm. And that, if you look at the Terry versus Martin case, for instance, the procedure that this case, this court has followed, when a there is a contention that the state court misinterpreted the Constitution and did not apply what the constitutional law is, then you look at that. You don't just say you're out of court, you can't raise this. In the Terry versus Martin case, I cite, shows very clearly what the procedure should be. They say, oh well, okay, here's this contention about searching a guest in a house. So we'll look at that on the merits. Was the court wrong in saying it didn't apply to this particular guest? Well, the court wasn't wrong in that particular case. But here you're not trying to deter the police. You're trying to deter a state court from misinterpreting the Constitution and declaring doctrines of law that are entirely contradictory to what the Supreme Court has enunciated. And particularly on this issue of the briefs to the appellate court, I would urge the court to look closely at what happened there. What happened was that this theory was not mentioned by the state or the defendant in their briefs, and it came up full-blown in the appellate court opinion. And then there was a very strenuous brief written to the Illinois Supreme Court attempting to get appeal on it, making the same points that Judge Gettleman makes and that we're making here, namely that this is off the wall. You can't have a rule where the police can begin detaining people and patting them down and so on because they think they're a witness to a case, and particularly a witness that they have no trouble locating. And, of course, on that point, on the point of was the appellate court dead wrong, and was there full and fair litigation, it seems to me that the state here is ducking that issue altogether. It's instead of examining the question of whether the state applied the proper constitutional law to the facts.
The state's view is that that is not the right question. Now, of course, if we disagree with the state, it's going to lose. But if the state is right, it's just not the right question.
Well, that's certainly the question that Weber and the other cases lay down. Applying the proper constitutional law to the facts. In this case, before Your Honors, that's really not an issue because the state hasn't even contested that Judge Gettleman was wrong. And frankly, it's hard to see how they could have contested it. In other words, this is one of those cases where there is an egregious legal problem with a court. It's not with the police. It's not whether they were acting reasonably and they really had a reasonable suspicion because of this evidence and that evidence, which is a usual Fourth Circuit case. This is an unusual case where a doctrine of Fourth Amendment law springs up in a state court. And now we're in a federal court saying, okay, this is what the exception to Stone Powell
means. Do you think in
Mapp
against Ohio, the Supreme Court of the United States failed to give the party's contention full and fair consideration?
In Mapp versus Ohio?
Yeah, in Mapp against Ohio. Nobody in Mapp had argued for the application of the exclusionary rule to the states. It was created by the justices by a vote of 5-4. Do you think they failed to give full and fair consideration because they were just coming up with a theory to resolve the case that neither side had argued?
Well, I think they were applying the proper constitutional law to the facts. I mean, they're the Supreme Court, after all. So, but when you're a federal court looking at what a state court is doing with the United States Constitution, you're in a little bit different situation. And that's the law in the circuit, that you have to see whether the state court has applied the proper constitutional law to the facts. And this is a very narrow class of cases. It's not the usual case where you're looking at the evidence that was before the officers. Did they have probable cause? Did they have reasonable suspicion? But here you have a whole new theory coming up that would have, and this case has been published, and it could have broad implications. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, at this time I would just simply conclude in stating that our position is that the petitioner did have an opportunity for his full and fair litigation. He brought the matter at pretrial. He again brought it on appeal. He's argued this issue, and accordingly, at this point, we don't feel that the district court should have ever reached the merits.
The LSAT scores of the three appellate judges in the record?
I don't believe so.
Of course, if we're going to adopt the question that it depends on whether they are pieces of stonemasonry, maybe we need to have extrinsic evidence on that point.
We'd be happy to brief. So finally, we're asking that the decision of the district court be reversed.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m.